Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, the Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the charismatic Craig, the masterful Michael Esperum, and the bodacious Bob Queck. Today, we have myself, Ange, along with Josh and JT, and we are going to talk about the forbidden topic of splitting the party. Before we dive into that main topic, though, we're going to ask our Get to Know a Gnome question, which today is going to dive right into the meat of the topic. Tell us about a time you were in a game where the party was split and how that went. JT, I'm going to start with you.
So this was back in D&D 3.0 days. I was running Return to the Temple of Elemental Evil, which is a big mega campaign, takes you from level 1 to 20. I think we finished up around level 16, but anyway. One of my players had read an article or a Dragon Magazine article or a blog post about this concept called Retreat Forward, which basically means when fight number one is almost done, not completely done, but almost done, somebody in the party runs to the next door, opens it, runs inside, and starts crap with the monsters on the other side. So now you have two fights going on at once. This was a large gaming group. We had 7 players. They would routinely retreat forward through 3 rooms at a go.
Oh, jeez.
Which is effectively splitting the party, kind of, but it was under their own terms. They wouldn't start the next fight until they knew the current fight was well in hand, like there's 2 zombies left or whatever. Well, at one point, they were in the volcano section of the campaign, which is basically a big old dungeon crawl around the rim of a volcano, or the outer edge of a volcano, big circle dungeon kind of thing. And they did their retreat forward thing, but they did it so effectively that they had 3 completely different splits of the party that were like drastically away from one another, because fight number one, they just, for some reason, just kept dragging on. They just could not hit and kill the very last monster, while the rest of the party is retreating forward through the remainder of the rooms. And the way I handled that is I was like, okay, yeah, it's 3 different combats, but I'm just going to have everybody roll for initiative, have my monsters roll for initiative. And I ran it effectively as a single combat, but you can only affect the people that were in the room you were with. Right. Fortunately, I had a battle grid with minis and all that good stuff. So it was very easy for me to keep track of who was where, who was next to whom, all that good stuff. And it worked out really well. It was a whole load of fun. But man, it was a lot of work on my part, because I was flipping between stat blocks on like 4 different pages and trying to keep track of what strategies the monsters were going to use next on their turn and all that good stuff. And
that sounds like so much.
It's like the Leroy Jenkins method of dungeon traversal.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I was going to say, that is like the exact strategy you use when you're running running a timed dungeon in World of Warcraft, is move on to the next fight before the last one's over with, so that you can make it in under the buzzer. But like,
what about you, Josh? Do you have a story for us?
So I can't remember if I've told the story or not, but I was running a campaign that was a horror-themed Pathfinder 2e campaign. We had 2 different investigators. They constantly were splitting up so that they could cover more ground. And one of the investigators was a ghoul. He was like, well, I'm going to go to the graveyard because we're investigating some murders and I'm a ghoul, so that makes sense. But what he didn't realize was that he had stumbled onto like the entrance to like the mini boss's area. And so the rest of the party, that included all of like the fighters and everybody and the healer, were off like investigating or interviewing townspeople. And he, like, I wasn't going to just throw him into the middle of the mini boss on his own. So I like narrated him seeing them like heading into the secret lair. He's like, well, I'm going to try to follow them. I'm like, okay.
Oh, no.
Okay. Well, you are a ghoul and they are ghouls as well. It happened to align that way. Like, it was a pre-written adventure. I didn't come up with that. So I have like this whole scene where he's like interviewing the mini boss and like trying to get in well with her. And he's like making really good, like, lying, like deception rolls and stuff like that. But then when the other party tried to come find him, the enemy ghouls were like, oh no, these people aren't ghouls, so we're gonna attack them. So there was this big battle happening in the graveyard where the one party member who is like kind of trained in thievery but not really trained in thievery is trying to break into the mausoleum that takes them down into the crypt area, while the other 2 party members are trying to fend them off, while the 4th party member is just having like a nice casual chat, trying to lie his ass off to the mini boss. it all worked out. Nobody died. He did get a little bit brainwashed, but that just made for more fun roleplay in the next session.
Nice. How about you, Ange?
So for me, in the City of Cowls 5th edition D&D game I've been playing for a very long time that I've talked about many times, we had a situation where we knew the nobles in the city were up to no good. And we had two lines of inquiry we could follow. One was that there was a noble who had stashed a whole bunch of food in a warehouse, and there was a blight going on, so the people of the city were starving. So we wanted to get that food before he could move it out of the city and get it to the people of the city. But at the same time we wanted to deal with that, we found out there was a social event happening at the mansion of a noble we had suspicions about, because she was kind of reclusive and we hadn't heard her, and we believed some of these nobles were part of some sort of conspiracy cult thing. Well, we decided to split the party. We sent our beefy folks to the warehouse. So our fighter, our monk, and our cleric of Cord, so a Tempest cleric, all went to the warehouse. And then my sorcerer, the warlock, and the rogue went to the social event for us two social characters to be social and sneak in that way, and for the rogue to be sneaky and run around. What ended up happening is that the fight at the warehouse was a cakewalk.
Of course.
Any of us probably could have done it on our own. It was so easy. Like, nothing bad happened. Meanwhile, at the noble's mansion, we have my sorcerer and the warlock sneaking our way in. The rogue, you know, like, sneaking our way in socially. The rogue is sneaking her way in through the upper levels. And we ended up finding out, yes, we were right. It was a cult. It was a conspiracy of nobles led by a Gorgon. Basically, the noblewoman who no one had seen for a while had been turned into this Gorgon, and she was leading these cultists. So it was the warlock and the sorcerer in a fight against the Gorgon and her subjects, while upstairs on the second level of the mansion is the rogue basically playing a game of keep away with a anti-paladin and another rogue who are basically chasing her around trying to kill her. It was so tense and so amazing. In the end, we killed the Gorgon. She turned half of her followers to stone.
Oh, wow.
We set the mansion on fire. The rogue got away from the people upstairs, and we got back to the rest of the party who were sitting in the bar going, "What took you so long?" Like, we still talk about that one today. One of the common pieces of advice you'll hear given as an absolute is never split the party. And obviously, as you can tell from the stories we just told, that's not as absolute as some people say it. It's so ingrained in the way we talk about RPGs that it's a common refrain even newbies will hear. So we wanted to talk about this and dig into why, or why not, we split the party. So let's talk bare basic definitions. What do we mean when we say splitting the party? JT, I'll go to you first.
All right. Basically, it's taking the party as a whole and putting some of them over there and some of them way over there and maybe even some more of them way, way over there. So they can't help each other. And depending on your setting, they may not even be able to communicate with one another. Like, if they're lower level fantasy D&D, there's no cell phones, there's no telepathy, there's no quick communication. So what one part of the group is doing, the rest of the group is completely ignorant of it, and vice versa. So that's kind of the baseline there.
Josh, do you have anything to add to that definition?
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty much it. It's making two or more groups out of one big group, right? And making sure that they're isolated from each other in some manner. The JT kind of nailed it there.
I think in essence, it's instead of having one scene with all the players in it, you now have two or more scenes with a mix of players in them.
Yeah.
So why is it considered bad?
This comes back to when D&D, I think it's one of those old adages that just worked its way into the culture that isn't really examined when you say it, right? You kind of just, it's just accepted knowledge that you don't split the party. But I think it developed from like those mega dungeons, like the Elemental Evil adventure, right?
Uh-huh.
If one set of the party goes left and the other goes right, then you're not going to have enough people to face all of the stuff that's in the next room.
Yeah, I think it's in a lot of games where encounters are, in essence, mechanically designed for a certain group of characters. It can get out of hand very quickly if the characters don't come into that scene with their full power as a group.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
Right.
So, you know, if you got, you know, six PCs and you split them six ways, they don't have each other's back. The cleric can only heal themselves. The bard can only give themselves boosts. And of course, if the bard is boosting himself, he's not actually doing anything negative towards the adversaries that the bard is facing. So it weakens the whole group by splitting them up, but they can also get a lot more accomplished. But that's another bullet point.
I think it's important to point out that most pre-written adventures, especially for D&D and D&D-esque games, are generally designed for between 4 to 6 characters.
Yeah.
And it's assumed there is a fairly balanced party and that the adversaries in those encounters are designed to be a challenge for that group of characters. If you split them up and they, you know, only two characters come into it. I was running Dragon Heist for my group and there's a chase.
Yep.
And the chase is supposed to end in a fight with a chain devil and some extra minions. And the way it worked out with my group, of the six players, two immediately gave chase, two immediately gave up, two tried to chase and then failed and basically just bickered the rest of the way home. And the two that gave chase, one of them was a tabaxi rogue who could basically double the move that the orc bard could do.
Right.
So he was basically hell and gone. And it was, you know, in part, it was me as a GM not having a good handle on how to run the chase, but inevitably it split the party. And when, thank God, the player playing the tabaxi rogue was smart enough to not immediately engage with the chain devil at the end of that chase.
That's good.
Because I'm like, I don't know what I'm going to do if he starts a fight.
Right.
He can't take this adversary on his own.
What you're going to do is you're going to hand the player 4d6 and tell him start rolling.
Well, and I mean, like, games like D&D aren't really meant for one-on-one combat, right?
Right.
No, definitely not.
To Angela's point, like the pre-made adventures are designed for a party that sticks together, and the monsters are designed to be tackled by a group of 4 to 5 or 6 people. They're not really designed to be a one-on-one fight.
And I think that's true in a lot of games that lean more towards crunchier combat, I guess I'll say.
More tactical combat stuff.
Yeah, more tactical combat. The combats are designed for a certain number of characters. So if splitting the party is so bad because players can take their characters into a situation where they're going to be completely overwhelmed, why does it still happen so often? Why is it okay to split the party? Josh, I'll start with you this time.
To JT's point, it's more efficient, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're all pretty goal-oriented, theoretically, when we're in a game. Like, we want to do the thing. We want to play the game. We want to win to a certain extent, but where there's winning is having a good time. But sometimes winning is like checking off that box, right?
Yeah.
Like, completed the quest, killed the monster, figured out who killed this person. And if you get like one person in the group who's any sort of like project manager or manager of any kind who is good at delegating, then you're going to have like, okay, you go over here, you do that, you do this. And then the party has starfished or starburst out everywhere, and it's all split up, and the GM's pulling out their hair because like now they're not running one game, they're running 5 games.
yep, that's where the spotlight management comes in for the GM.
Yeah.
And if I know the GM is new to game mastering, and my watermark for that is they've only been running a game, you know, GMing or DMing for about a year or less, I still consider them fairly new. And that's not a judgment call. I'm not judging their capabilities, but just level of experience, right? I will encourage my fellow players to not split the party, because that's one more thing for the GM to have to manage is the spotlight. Because they might accidentally spend 20 minutes with one half of the party while the other half of the party Doom scrolls Facebook on their phone, and then they'll flip back to the other side for 20 minutes. And really, it should be kind of your 5 to 8 minute increments, maybe even a little less than that. Mm-hmm. But new game masters don't quite have that skill unless they have professional experience, such as running project management style meetings where there's 8 different people all with a different agenda and you've got to answer 8 different questions at once. You know, they might have professional experience that lends to game mastering. But I'll encourage folks to be nice to the new GMs and not split the party.
I think it can also, depending upon the game you're running and the type of scenario that the players are engaging with, it can be thematically appropriate for them to split the party.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure.
You know, it's an investigation scene, mm-hmm. or it's some sort of social encounter, in which case having the players stick together like glue is not going to be as fun for everyone else, because if you've got some sort of social encounter where there's a big party and they need to mingle and interact with different people, yeah, split the party. Go talk to different people. Oh, yeah. Go do different things. You can have the super social face character over there talking up a storm and distracting, you know, the big wig of the party while somebody else is asking questions in a corner that nobody wants them to, you know, be asked. Or the super sneaky character is off sneaking around the place, someplace else, trying to find physical clues. That's thematically appropriate for that type of scene, for that type of adventure. So it's like, do what makes sense for the scene. It's just, as a GM, you really do need to develop those spotlight management skills so you can keep everyone engaged and keep the game moving and not feel like you're stuck on one person.
Yeah, yeah. And also for some games like Blade Runner from Free League, you want to split the party, because I've never run the game. I read the rules and went, eh, not for me. Loved the book and the setting. It was, oh my God, beautiful. They really captured Blade Runner very well. Brought it to the table, so this is kind of cold knowledge from just reading the book. But you have 4 actions per day that you can take. They didn't call them actions. It was like scenic events or something like that. But one of them had to be downtime. You could push through, but there's negative consequences on your character if you don't take that one mm-hmm. segment of time during the day, that one quarter of the day, to get a little rest and relaxation. If the party all sticks together, that means they're doing 3 things per day during the investigation, and that's it. But if you split the party half and half, you got 2 go over here and 2 go over there, now you have 6 investigation type or interview type events that you can take place. So now you're gathering twice as many clues. You got 4 players and they all go off on their own. Now you're gathering potentially up to 12 clues per day. And a lot of the 3 adventures that the Kickstarter came with, you're on a timer. That seemed to be a fairly natural thing, because you're investigating some crime or a murder or whatever. And you're on a timer to catch the bad guy or bad guys before they escape the city or get away or commit the next crime or, you know, whatever the scenario happened to be. So by splitting the party, you're shortening the time frame of your investigation and getting to the bad guy quicker. So it's beneficial to the players.
That sounds like a mechanic I might want to steal for other games. That sounds really cool.
Yeah, I loved the downtime or the R&R, the relaxation and you know, rest
yeah.
section.
Yeah.
That was really good. It worked much better than the D&D exhaustion rules.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't quite as punitive, but it still had an impact.
Mm-hmm.
And if you went like 3 downtimes and you skipped like in a row, like you're up for 3 straight days, basically you're ineffective at that point, which reflects reality. I mean,
yeah.
I stayed up 3 straight days, and for days 4 and 5 after that, I was a useless lump of flesh on the couch.
Those days are long behind me.
Oh, yeah. That was in my 20s. That was early 20s for me. Yeah.
I feel like games in like a modern or future setting lend themselves more towards splitting the party.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, like, if you think about it, like, how many times are you, like, walking around the city with 5 of your friends? You are a big group at that point, and, like, everybody is noticing you. It feels weird to not, like, go off and do your own thing with, like, maybe 1 person or 2 other people.
Yeah.
And, like, in modern games and in sci-fi games, like JT mentioned at the beginning, we have cell phones,
mm-hmm.
right? We have computers. We have ways of contacting and being in touch so that even if, like, someone isn't in the scene, they could still be in the scene.
I have a Doctor Who scenario I've run before, which involves a time loop. And I start it with the party split. Everyone is in their own lives doing their own things. I go through a scene with each person figuring out what they're doing that day and then basically trigger the time reset. And they're back at the beginning of that scene and they start to realize, oh, there's something weird going on. And obviously they have cell phones. They can call each other. They can communicate. And then the rest of the adventure is them trying to get together to get to the point where the time rift is happening before it triggers again. And it's basically like continually splitting the party to try and get them back together again. I think I wrote an article on this one. I don't know. It was a while ago, but it's the, you know, there's some tricks to how to do that, but it is like starting the party split and then having the goal to be to get them together.
As Game Master, you can also recombine the party more easily in a modern or futuristic setting by having their boss or their handler or whatever phrase you want to use. What's the Shadowrun agent?
Fixer?
Yeah, the Fixer. Yeah, but not a party member, but an NPC. Go, hey, something just went down at the Blue Rose Bar. I need you here now. And slurp, that brings the party back together.
Yeah, and I think it's also important to say, when you have a player getting close to pushing into a scene that is supposed to be a combat scene, and you know it's going to be overpowering for them, you can try and give them a nudge. I wouldn't have them do a roll because they might fail it, and then you're kind of screwed. But yeah, you can tell them, hey, you're looking at this scenario, and you think, oh, I might be in over my head because those guys are armed.
Right.
I may need to go get the rest of the group. You know, you can drop those clues to the players.
One trick I usually use when I've got a party that's split and I want to try to nudge them back together for stuff like that is that I use the fact that when you split the party, the timeline gets real wonky.
Mm-hmm.
Like you might be focusing on somebody and that like they're like they have like a more broad idea of what they want to do. So all of their actions take like a couple hours, where someone else wants to like have an in-depth conversation with another character. So that only takes like 30 minutes or something like that. So I use that like timey-wimey-ness to reference Doctor Who and say, okay, so like you've done all of these things, but like we're going to bring it back to a certain like a point in the timeline. You have had the chance to reconvene with folks if you want to. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Right.
I actually put my foot down with a player. I don't remember if it was last year or the year before. I was running a con game, and it was a Vaisen game, so it's investigative. Everyone kind of split up to go look for clues, and I had one player who kept refusing to re-engage with the group. I basically had went through all of them. They'd all had their own separate little investigation scenes. And I'm like, okay, you guys get together back at the tavern to talk about this. And this one player's like, no, I'm over in the corner. I'm pretending I don't know them. I'm just listening in. And I'm just like, okay, fine, whatever. And like, I just could not get him to re-engage with the group. And we finally get to the point where it's the finale of the scenario. And I'm like, okay, you guys go into this place. And he's like, no, I'm over here doing this. And I'm like, no, you are not, because I am running the finale of this game. And if you are over there, then you might as well stop playing right now, because the finale of the game is happening here.
Right.
Like, you can reach a point with your players to say, hey, look, I'm trying to accommodate you as best I can, but the adventure is here now. You want to let your players explore and do what they want. But there comes a time where you can be like, hey, we need to get back together. We need to have the group together to wrap this up.
Yep, that's more than fair. More than fair.
Yeah.
Especially at a con game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You're out of time, though. Yeah.
Yeah. The funny thing about that session was that this player's boyfriend was playing, and he kept apologizing for being a new player, and he was fantastic. Like, I loved him. I'm like, oh, please come play again. But the boyfriend who just kept trying to separate himself, I'm like, dude, just stop. Come back to the group. Come back.
Right.
So how do the mechanics of a game influence this? I mean, obviously, we talked about how especially pre-written adventures are generally designed for a certain number of characters. So combats are designed and balanced for that. Are there any other aspects of the mechanics that can help or hinder the party getting split?
For helping, again, we've already covered this, but communication. Is there an ease of communication, mm-hmm, across disparate areas? Whether that be the setting, meaning they have cell phones or the Star Trek communicators or, something along those lines, or do they have magic where they can establish a party-wide telepathic link so that they're in communications, or at least was it sending or message, or is it both? I forget. I've played so many different versions of D&D.
Sending is the one that you can send a
Oh, yeah, there
25
you go.
word message to somebody anywhere and then they can reply. Message is the if they're within line
Gotcha.
of sight, you can give them a quick
There you
mental
go. So
message.
there's some options, but
There's a slightly like a third level or fourth level spell that also you can establish a mental link between a certain group of characters, but that's, you're getting a little higher level at that point.
So yeah, splitting the party at low levels is always much more dangerous than at the higher levels, mainly because of character competency and capability.
Right.
There are systems that have, I mean, it might be like downtime systems, or it might call it something else, like the Blade Runner system was calling it something else, right? But it's built in where it's assumed that the party members are going to go off and do their own thing at a time. And so if they have like subsystems built in that help with that, I forget which Gumshoe game I was reading. I remember them talking about like, and this was like written into the rules, they're like, keep a list of your PCs and like check off every time they do a thing so that you've got a visual reminder of like who has like done a cool thing,
Right.
right? So that is another like little system that just helps you split the party more easily and make sure the spotlight is moving around. So there are a lot of ways that you can support a split party in the system itself.
Yeah.
And keeping an eye out for systems that don't have any of that stuff, like maybe it's harder to split the party in those games.
Yeah. Let's talk about advice. What advice would you give to GMs when it comes to splitting the party?
Let them. It's their agency. It's their choice. Again, you can give them the nudge that, hey, you've been split for a little too long, or you are about to venture into dangerous territory. You glance through the warehouse window, and your intelligence told you there were two thugs with Uzis, but you see eight thugs with Uzis. Are you sure you want to kick down that door? But again,
Yeah.
if they want to initially split for whatever reason, if you know danger is imminent around the corner, the great GM question of all time is, are you sure you want to do that? And if they are like, yes, we need to split the party, or we want to split the party, or we want to retreat forward because that's their thing, let them. Don't steal that agency away from them.
This is where I will call again to the refrain I keep saying. Respect the competency of the characters. These are characters that live in this world. They are, unless generally speaking, they are good at the things they are good at. And if you know they're about to head into a situation that's going to be dangerous, acknowledge that the character would probably recognize that. You could have them make a roll, but again, like I said earlier, if they fail the roll, then you're kind of screwed. So I would just say, hey, you as a mercenary are recognizing signs that you're heading into a situation that you might be getting into a fight very quickly. It's the have an understanding of like when you want to give them those warnings.
I've got like three main pieces of advice. That first one that I talked about with the gumshoe game of keeping a list of your PCs, like even if you are sitting in front of the table with your group and you can see them all there looking at you, still having that list and being like, okay, Ange just had a spotlight scene, and so and so also had a spotlight. Hey, I haven't checked in with JT yet in a while. Like having that list and those check marks to know when to move the spotlight around really helps keep that in the forefront of your mind without taking up the GMing processing power,
Right,
right? It
right.
like offloads that processing power, so you don't have to worry about that.
And you're always going to have some players at the table that are a little quieter than others.
Oh yeah.
There's going to be the ones that kind of, even if they don't intend to, kind of dominate the scene and dominate the GM's attention. And this can give you that visual representation of, oh, I really need to check in with the other players.
I mean, I use it even when the party isn't split, but it works particularly well when they are.
Yeah.
Our brains are, we have already trained our brains for a natural feeling for when to switch scenes. And that is because we watch television, and television has trained us that every 5 to 8 minutes, something new happens. So if you go with that like commercial break gut feeling of like, it's been about 5 minutes, we should switch scenes. Like, trust that gut feeling of when the commercial break should happen. And that's when you should move the spotlight to somebody else. If you can move it on a cliffhanger, even better.
Oh, yeah. But, oh, yeah. When the player kicks down the door, oh, next player.
Yep.
We'll come back to you in a minute.
I how do I phrase this? Leave space for your players to chew the scenery.
Oh, yes.
I sometimes have been known to move the spotlight too quickly. And I've had players ask me, hey, we could have gone a little longer with that scene between me and the other player's character. And I'm like, oh, crap, I'm sorry. I should have let that breathe a slightly little bit longer. You can also do the, you know, hey, we'll get back to you two just a moment. I'm going to go check in over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the things to keep in mind. Spotlight management is probably one of the key skills you can develop as a GM, regardless of any mechanics or any system.
Oh, yeah.
Spotlight management is the important thing to develop and learn.
Yeah, Dawson's trick of checking off characters or PC names as they do things so that the number of check marks is roughly equal, that's huge.
Yeah.
It just makes your players feel like they're the heroes, right? It makes them feel seen.
Yeah.
I once played in a Mutants and Masterminds game that was, we were the Justice League. So we're talking Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, all the heavy hitters. And this game started with us all in our separate areas doing our own separate things. When we started getting alerts that there was danger in Themyscira, there's something going on in Gotham, and the GM handled this so masterfully with each of us going to find out what was going on in the area that we're concerned with and you know, having a little fight scene there and learning more information and then switching to somebody else. He kept the spotlight moving perfectly with all of us like starting to figure things out, and then because it's the Justice League and it's superheroes and we've got communicators and all of this, we were able to start communicating with each other and realize, oh, there's a bigger problem. It's in this location. And then basically it was almost the halfway point of the session where we all finally converged together in one location. And it was just,
that's cool.
So well done that he started with a split party and was able to keep everyone invested and engaged through the spotlight shifting very quickly and purposefully between the characters. It was really well done.
And if you have a new player and you know they're a new player, don't spotlight them first.
That's right.
Yeah.
Let them get comfortable with the team. I've made that mistake. Learn from my mistake, right? I was running a Dresden Files game under the original Dresden Files rules that were very heavy, especially when it came to the magic part was, oh my God, complex. But I had four players, everybody's at home in their own separate homes, and they're going to get a phone call from a mutual friend saying, hey, I got a problem. Can you come to my house? I don't know what's going on. I need help. It was just going to be a quick little conversation, and I could have totally prologued it and just told the story of you've received a phone call, you arrive at the house, boom, done. But I wanted to have a little interaction with the NPC because they all had this common NPC in their background. But their relationship with the NPC was subtly different between each character. So the conversation was going to be a little bit different between each one, and I wanted to highlight that. And it didn't matter whose phone rang first as far as the plot and storyline went. So I picked up a D4 and I rolled it, and I was like, hey, your phone rings. And I realized as soon as I said that, it's the brand new player who's never played a role-playing game in her life.
Oh,
yeah.
And the deer in the headlights look that she gave me, I was like, I should have gone, wait, nope, whoever's on the phone hung up, your phone stopped ringing, you, next player, your phone rings, right? And then I should have done that, but we got through it. It was okay. It could have been better. I could have had that interaction with the more experienced role players and saved her for last, so she could have, you know, quote unquote, seen how it's done.
I had a different Doctor Who scenario where it was, they receive a call from somebody saying there's something happening weird with the birds on Alcatraz. And I figured it makes sense to start this with the player who is the former veterinarian. And so I'm like, you get a call. This is the situation. And I'm like, I had prefaced this with, you guys all know each other. You've worked together before. You have each other's phone number. And I throw this to this player. And I'm like, okay, who do you call first? And he's like, I call some random NPC. And he was like hogging the spotlight and refusing to call any of the other PCs to pull them into this. And I was just like, oh, what have I done? And so I finally, like, the psychic character, you have a vision. You need to reach out and call everyone and have them all meet at the docks. That player kind of got it. And, like, I learned very quickly that be careful about those scenes where you like, start with one character with the information because you got to know that player is a solid player and knows to, like, share the game with everyone else.
Right.
I think this is more evidence that these skills take time to learn, right?
Yeah.
Because like we've learned from all of
Oh,
these
yeah.
experiences, and it makes us better at it.
Yeah, and I think that's a perfect point to say, you know, as a GM, you can tell your players, "Hey, I'm getting a little overwhelmed with you guys being all over the place. I'm trying to wrangle this as best I can, but I'm a, you know, like whether you're new at it or you're stressed out for some other reason or whatever, you can just say, "Hey, I'm having a little trouble wrangling all of this," and try and get everyone back together. You know, or just have a little patience with me as I deal with this. Because it's, I think we tend to put a lot of pressure on GMs to appear perfect. And all of
Yeah.
us here can tell you that we are not perfect.
Oh, no, far from it. Far from it.
You just heard JT and I talk about mistakes we've made.
I don't know about you, but I have never made a mistake before in my life. One other piece of advice, this is probably my favorite piece of advice for managing a split party without raising your own blood pressure. I stole this from Monte Cook Games. The way they do their Numenera adventures is they have, like, I think they call them like story keys or core keys or something like that. A key is in the word somewhere. But the idea is that like the main plot stuff, like the information, the secrets, the items you need are completely divorced from location. If the group splits up, right, and someone goes to the graveyard, another person goes to the library, a third person goes to the hospital, it doesn't matter where they have gone. You can take those chunks of information and place them where they are headed.
Right.
That way, if your party is all split up, but none of them have gone to the alleyway where the clue is hidden under the dumpster, it doesn't matter. They're not going to be wasting their time or just spinning their wheels. You can plop the bit of information they need where they are headed, and you can keep your story moving along that way without having to try to direct them to a single spot or a single location.
Another key GM skill to learn is how to be flexible with your plot points and the information you're giving the players. I know there are people who will kind of grumble at, well, if the clue is at the bottom of the dumpster, the clue should be at the bottom of the dumpster. And it's like, no, it's you gotta adapt to what your players are doing. And if none of the players have keyed in that you want them to go to the dumpster, you gotta fix it. You gotta move that clue someplace else.
Clues are meant to land in the hands of the PCs, regardless of where they find them. So, like Hinch said, if they're not looking in or under the dumpster, move it to where they are looking. Because if they don't find the clue, your adventure's over, you go home.
It's called collaborative storytelling for a reason, right?
Correct.
It's collaboration.
Any last thoughts before we start wrapping up?
For me, be mentally prepared. Look for split points in your story where the party could split, like a branching hallway, or they come into a room that has four exits, not counting the one that they came in. That's a prime opportunity for the party to go four different directions. You're never going to know when they're going to split the party, but just do a little forethought and go, oh, right here, they might split the party. How do I need to adjust the pre-published adventure if they do? And you don't need to go rewrite stat blocks and do hours and hours of prep. Just kind of be aware of where it might happen. Or if they receive two clues at the same time that take them in two different directions, hey, that's a chance to split the party. So just be aware of where it can happen.
When they do split, I try to work in tidbits or secrets from other members who aren't there into that scene. So if they go and they're talking to the local debutante or whatever, the noble, and you've got like a secret prince or secret noble in your party, right? Drop some descriptions about like, oh, I haven't seen this person. They've got long red hair. It's a great way to start weaving in other characters' plots when they're not there. And then, like, everybody at the table is going to be like, ooh, you know.
Final thing I'll say is develop your skills at spotlight management. That's the ultimate tool as a GM you need to be able to deal with your party going in different directions. And also, as I said before, don't hesitate to shove them back together.
Right? Oh,
Like,
yeah.
ask politely, nudge gently in the narrative, and then just go, guys, please get back together. This show is funded by the Gnome Stew Patreon. You too can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnome Stew website to the Gnome Stew Patreon. We love doing this, and our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
Ange and Jared love talking about RPGs and D&D. Together, they share insights into the games they're running and tackle a variety of topics that affect the game. Maybe you'll even pick up an ancient D&D factoid from a previous edition of the game that you'll never use.
Say the name.
I'm supposed to say the name. Whoops, it's Thacko with advantage.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with Gnome Stew on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Threads. Anything else you guys want to give a shout out to today?
Technology stack that I use at the table, whether I'm a player or a game master. It is my iPad, my Apple Pencil, and an app called GoodNotes, which lets me capture images, screenshots, my own horrible handwriting, typewritten notes if I want to go that route. But it outputs all into one document, and you can have multiple tabbed documents open at the same time. And I do this as a player where I have a character document, which has PCs and NPCs, general journal, which is me documenting all the fun stuff that happened and where we met people and where we went and all that. What else? Maps is another document. My character sheet is another document. And, oh, quests and miscellaneous is my last one. But I just wanted to give a shout out to GoodNotes because it's really great for taking notes at the table. The problem is it's pretty intense on the battery. So in one session, I show up with a full battery and I leave with about 7% left of my battery. But granted, our sessions start at 1 p.m. and end about 8:30, 9 p.m. So we play like these mega sessions once a week. If we were at a four-hour session, battery life would be no problem. But and I also have an article where I talked about this 6 years ago. I looked it up. Oh, my God. It was 6 years ago. I wrote a Gnome Stew article about this. So if you want more details.
What is even time?
Yeah, I know. So if you want more details and screenshots and other fun stuff like that, there will be a link in the show notes.
The scary thing is that 6 years ago was only 2019.
I know.
Yeah. Josh, you got anything to shout out?
Yeah, I'm going to shout out Authors Against Book Bans. It is an organization geared towards authors and creatives, but it also has links with a whole bunch of other organizations where you can find out and also find ways of helping fight against censorship and book banning. And highly recommend that you go check them out and support them in whatever way you can.
Awesome. I'm just going to point out that even though it is 5 months away in June, Origins is approaching. They are theoretically going to be opening event registration in March. I would expect it closer to April. But either way, it is coming up. And if you would like to go to a fairly big and awesome convention, it's probably time to start planning it. I know I'll be there.
Awesome.
So do you think if we all ran separate directions, we'd stay out of the stew?
There's only one stew pod. It can't follow all of us.
Right, yes. Yeah, you don't have to outrun the dragon, just the halfling.